Want to start an argument? Try this question on for size. Are humans unique, one of a kind, or are we really not that different from our ape cousins, chimpanzees? Steve Paulson's here in the studio with me, and he's been pushing that question around among scientists. It's a hot debate.
It is. This debate over human uniqueness really stirs up a lot of scientists, especially, and it raises all kinds of questions about the nature of language, about tool use, and ultimately about what does it mean to be human? Do we stand apart from the rest of the animal world? And one of the most fascinating perspectives comes from Frans de Waal, who's a prominent biologist at the Yerkes Primate Center in Atlanta, and he's been studying chimpanzees and bonobos for decades.
And he finally has a new book out about it, right?
He does. It's called The Bonobo and the Atheist. And basically, Frans de Waal is asking whether we can find the building blocks of morality in chimps and bonobos. So I was really curious to hear what he's found out so far when I had the chance to talk with him.
Of course, to the biologist, we are animals. So for the biologist, that's hard to believe that we are fundamentally different because we have the same brains. And there's actually no part in the human brain that is not present in the monkey brain. So the brains are bigger. And we certainly have, let's say, a more powerful computer than any other animal. But the computer is not fundamentally different.
So there's no fundamental divide between humans and, let's say, chimpanzees?
No. If you would ask me what is the big difference, I would say it's probably language. But even, it's like with all capacities, if you break them down in pieces, you're going to find some of these pieces in some other species. And that's what I'm doing with morality, obviously. I break it into pieces and I say, well, this piece we can find in chimpanzees and this piece. I'm not sure we find the whole thing, morality as we know it in humans. But we're finding a lot of bits and pieces that I call the building blocks of morality.
Well, you've spent decades studying non-human primates. Can you give me some sense of a chimpanzee's morality?
Well, a chimpanzee's morality, they have a sense of fairness. They are cooperative animals like we are. And if you cooperate, you need to watch what you get out of the cooperation. So if I cooperate with you, and let's say I go hunting with you regularly, and you always take the best pieces of meat and I get very little scraps, that's not a good partnership for me. And so I need to be sensitive to that. And we find that chimpanzees and bonobos are sensitive to fairness. We find that they can be empathic, that they respond to the distress of others by reassuring others and sharing food with them and that kind of things. We do actually experiments on that.
How do you experiment with that? I mean, how do you do that experiment?
Well, a typical experiment like that is that you put two chimpanzees who normally live together, so they know each other. You put them side by side in two rooms. And then you let one of them choose between two tokens, let's say blue tokens and red tokens. And if they pick a blue token and they give it to us, they get rewarded for that. If they pick a red token and they give it to us, they get a reward, but also their partner at the same time gets a reward. It doesn't make any difference for them because they get rewarded every time they give us a token. The only difference is that does my partner get something, yes or no? And what we find is that over time, they start to prefer the what we call the pro-social token. They start to prefer the token that rewards the two of them. Hmm. And so we use that as a measure to indicate that chimpanzees do care about the well-being of others.
We should talk about some specific examples that you write about in your book, The Bonobo and the Atheist, which are fascinating, which get to these questions of the moral instincts of chimps and bonobos. For instance, you write about an old female chimp at your colony at Yerkes, Peony. Tell me about her.
She had arthritis. She was very old and could barely move. And so there were cases where we observed that, for example, if she tried to climb into a climbing frame where a bunch of chimps were sitting and grooming each other, she wanted to join them, but she could barely get in there, that younger females would walk up to her and put their hands on her behind and start pushing until she was up there with the rest. We've seen cases where she started walking towards a water faucet. It's a very large enclosure, and so the distances are pretty long. And so since she walks with so much difficulty, that we have seen younger females run ahead of her and drink in the water in their own mouth and then walk up back to her and spit it in her mouth. And so she wouldn't need to walk all the way to the faucet, and they would bring her the water.
So you're talking about empathy here. I mean, the capacity to recognize another chimpanzee's pain or difficulties and then to help that animal.
Yeah, empathy is one of those traits that humans overestimate the complexity of. And that's why if you tell the average psychologist, you say there's empathy in animals, they will say, oh, that's not possible. Because they think empathy means that you consciously put yourself in the shoes of somebody else. Now, we know from human research now that that's not the case. In human research, we know there's a lot of empathy, automatic empathy responses. Like if I'm frowning and looking sad, you're going to be frowning and looking sad because you're going to be affected by my facial emotions. Or if I'm happy and laughing and smiling, you're going to be laughing and smiling. And so there's a lot of bodily connection in human empathy. And that bodily connection, which is usually called emotional contagion, is easily demonstrable in lots of animals. Hmm. And so we test out these bodily connections that exist, and that's how empathy basically starts.
Now, we should say also that chimpanzees have very complicated social lives. I mean, they live in big groups. There's a lot of jockeying for social status, which is constantly changing among both the males and the females. And there's plenty of competition for food and for mating partners. There's a lot to sort out here, isn't there?
Yeah, that's the interesting part, is that chimpanzees have both sides. They can be very violent and very dominance-oriented, and they defend their territory with lethal aggression. And so chimpanzees can be very nasty, and they can be very cooperative and very friendly. So what species does that remind you of? That's the question. Because people sometimes say, well, if chimpanzees kill each other, how can you call them empathic? Well, the same argument applies to humans. Humans have that whole spectrum also.
And you also say there are cases where two males have been fighting, and then the fight is over, and you know they're kind of licking their wounds, but then there might be a female who comes in and basically pulls those two males together and sort of forces them to make up.
I relate that to what I call community concern. Chimpanzees and bonobos, they seem to have, more than any other animal that I know, they seem to have some understanding of their community as a whole. And they seem to worry about the level of harmony in their group. And so females will, for example, monitor the fights between males. And if these males don't reconcile after the fight, they're going to go over there. It's usually older females who do that, high-ranking older females. She will go over there and she will start grooming one of these two males who doesn't want to reconcile. And after a few minutes, she will walk to the other and bring the other male with her. If the male doesn't want to follow, she will take his arm and make him follow. And then she will bring the two males together, and these males are then supposed to groom each other, and they often do.
And aren't sometimes the males still holding a weapon of some sort? And aren't there cases where the female will take that weapon out of their hands?
Yeah, they take the weapons out of their hands. And only females can do that. A male could not be a mediator, because as soon as a male walks into a scene like that, he's going to be perceived as the buddy of one of the two, as a supporter. And so females are much more effective in that. And then the other way that we see community concern is when males break up fights. And so there are certain high-ranking males who take what we call the control role. And as soon as there's a little fight, even the littlest fight between two juveniles, they will go over there and stop that fight. They will break it up. And it's very important that they do, because small fights, like between two juveniles, they often escalate. I hear that at human daycare centers, that's not unusual also. Mm-hmm. And then it gets much bigger. And so it's very important that they nip these things in the bud.
So there's this whole dynamic kind of built into chimpanzee lives to be pro-social, to get along. That is the dominant ethic, even though there are lots of fights that break out.
Yeah, they, as I said, they have both sides. And I also compare us with bonobos. And bonobos are equally close to us as chimpanzees. They're more empathic, I think, than chimpanzees.
Well, you call them the politically correct primate.
Yeah, the hippies of the primate world, basically, because they have sex instead of war. And in relation to war, that's what I wanted to mention, is that when bonobo groups meet in the forest, there is some hostility going on, and people have documented that, but very soon they may overcome that and they will have sex with their neighbors.
But you'll have to explain this. So they've just met a rival group of bonobos, and then they suddenly start having sex with them?
Yeah, so they start out with yelling and screaming at each other and being intimidating. So there is some level of hostility. In chimpanzees, it would translate in a big fight in which someone may lose their life. But that's not what happens in bonobos. It has actually never been documented. Hmm. So that's a fundamental difference between bonobos and chimpanzees.
You say in your book that sex is utterly routine among bonobos. I mean, rubbing genitals with another bonobo is kind of like a human blowing his nose.
Yeah, so it's very casual. In bonobos, it's a little greeting of 10 seconds and then it's over. And so they rub their genitals together. They may touch each other's genitals. Sometimes it gets a bit more intensive and more involved. But most of the time, it's a very casual thing. It's like I slap you on the back or something like that.
And one of the other differences is that bonobos are matriarchal. I mean, the females are the dominant ones.
The females are collectively dominant. I would not say that they are individually dominant over the males. They are smaller, they are less muscular, they don't have the big teeth that the males have. But as a collectivity, and bonobos live in an environment where the females can travel together and be together, collectively they dominate the males. And so I find that a very interesting comparison, the contrast between chimps and bonobos on the one hand, and then the comparison with humans.
So the great question here is, which in our evolutionary history are we humans most closely related to? Because as far as we know, our ancestors broke off from the common ancestor of chimpanzees and bonobos at the same time. We're equally related to both. So is our common ancestor more bonobo-like or more chimpanzee-like?
Yeah, well, that's the big question, and we will maybe never know. There's sort of two schools on this. One is the traditional school, because we used to know only chimpanzees. Bonobos were barely known like 25 years ago. And so everyone is focused on the chimpanzee. The chimpanzee is violent in their interactions between groups. They have warfare. And so there is a school of anthropologists who believes that you only should look at the chimpanzee and that the bonobo is irrelevant because the chimpanzee fits their thinking about humans being killer apes and being aggressive. And only with time did we become more peaceful. And then there's, of course, another group of people who doesn't believe necessarily that we have always waged war and always been aggressive, that maybe human warfare is a more recent phenomenon, that we have not always been like that, and that the bonobo is actually highly relevant.
So this is a profound question here. I mean, we're really trying to figure out, are humans inherently good with a capacity for evil, or are we inherently evil with a penchant for doing good?
Well, I'm of the school that I think we are inherently good, and we do, under certain circumstances, we do horrible things. And so basically my argument is that this whole resistance to evolution, which comes from fundamental Christians, is partly a resistance to the idea that you could be moral without God.
Frans de Waal is a primatologist at the Yerkes Primate Center. His book is called The Bonobo and the Atheist. If you'd like to read Steve's extended interview with de Waal in the science magazine Nautilus, you'll find a link on our website at ttbook.org.